This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
Myers down the left wing for Hughes, shooter side of the goal. Elias Pettersson in front for DeBrusk. He scores. Jake DeBrusk at the top of the crease. Scores for the second time in as many games coming out of the Four Nations break. Utah wins the faceoff of the Vancouver. So shot for the line. They score. John Marino got the wrister through it. It was tipped by Logan Cooley in front.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Taylor to Schmaltz, right side, threw it to the goal, tip, they score! Dylan Guenther! Scores his team leading 21st of the year, and Utah leads 2-1.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks can't find any offense, lose 2-1 in Utah, back-to-back losses for the Canucks on the road coming back from the Four Nations break, a 2-1 defeat against the hockey club in Utah. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. We are going to welcome in Randy Janda into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650. You're toll free, 1-888-275-0650. Also hit us up on our Dunbar Lumber text them box, 650-650. And maybe the ice cream might be the more interesting conversation that IMAC was seen eating on the broadcast, so we'll have some fun with that as the show goes on. But a completely toothless offensive performance yet again from the Canucks. Only 15 shots on goal and far fewer scoring chances.
Yeah, they had a little bit of brain freeze this evening as far as offensive chance creation, trying to figure it out. And it's a struggle, man. Like, we can almost talk about every shot on goal. Usually there's too much to talk about. It's like, yeah, okay, they got to do this. We could probably sit here and talk about every shot on goal if we wanted to.
Yeah.
It's only 15 of them. Wouldn't take us that long.
Yeah.
And you come back from this little mini break. And again, they were playing well and they were kind of firing. And, you know, we chatted about, okay, is the break going to be good for the rest? You get Hughes back? What does it mean for Pettersson? And some guys can get healthy. Or is it, you know, getting up from the table on a heater? Well, what's going to happen? And now these two games here after the Four Nations break, really feels like the latter has emerged as the reality for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and really want that Quinn Hughes character back. Really missing Quinn Hughes right now.
Yeah.
Let's welcome in Randeep into the conversation. And Randeep, I mean, it's one of those games where it was right there for you, 1-1 late. A penalty gets taken by Derek Forbert, and Utah scores to make it 2-1. But the story remains, the Canucks have a very hard time generating offense. They scored one goal each game in these two on back-to-back nights.
That's right, boys. The offense is vanilla right now, going with the ice cream theme still.
Yeah.
It's not you mentioned it. You know, you start looking at the opportunities. There were not many. Yet still, throughout this game, even in the third period when it was 1-1, they still had an opportunity to get that go-ahead goal. But there are not many, you know, chances coming up here. There's not much zone time early on in this game, similar to the last time out against Vegas where – you're looking at the time of possession. You're saying, first of all, they're not getting any. You're not able to generate many chances. And even the maybe the half a look that they had a couple of times, whether it was Ole Mata or Ian Cole, kind of stepped in the way and boom, that was it. The puck was going back the other way. So I think, you know, this is a team that's struggling to generate offense. We saw that consistently tonight where there was one line early on in this game that was maybe providing that. Philip Hedl's line early on in this game was, I think it was in the second period when they had a good shift to kick off that period. They looked like they had some energy, but they need some offense consistently. And you're right, Quinn Hughes is the guy that starts everything with this team, and they need him badly right now.
When you're just looking at the construction of the top six right now, Randeep, and I'm not going to say, like, hey, go acquire this guy. Like,
yeah.
Of the options that you have available to you right now, how are you constructing it?
Yeah, this is a tricky thing.
I look at this like, yeah, okay, it's probably a couple of the guys that are there, but they're obviously not generating enough scoring chances. I'm not sure what options they have to them, but if you are to make any sort of tweaks, what would they be?
Yeah, I think with, you know, we've seen some good things from Hedl and O'Connor. I think you're going to have to, at some point, potentially try to see if you can maybe mix up that winger next to Hedl and Besser. I like O'Connor and what he's brought, but you need somebody with a little bit more finish potentially up there. So are you moving up somebody from that, you know, that Joshua line? Are you trying to get Joshua maybe to be that F1? I wouldn't mind having, just to change it up a little bit, to see if you're able to generate maybe a net front presence with the Dakota Joshua. I thought even tonight there were moments where he was being physical. He was getting to the middle of the ice. It wasn't as consistent as we've seen in the last few games. I do think that line needs a little bit more finish with that winger. Outside of that, you know, you look at the Pettersson line, what else can you do? You've got, you know, your leading goal scorer in Jake DeBrusk there. You've got Kiefer Sherwood, that's supposed to be the spark plug. You know, he's going to be that F1. He's throwing hits. In regards to changing up the top six, I don't think there's that many options. I would change around that winger probably right now with Drew O'Connor. And, you know, that's kind of the player he is. You move him up, you move him down. Mm-hmm. When he's going, you can throw him on that, you know, the top line or top two lines and try to get the forecheck going. But when he's not, you know, he's very much in an elevator, right? You got to move him down as well. I don't think he's a fixture on that top six by any stretch.
No, and we'll see ultimately how all these kind of things shake out. And, you know, obviously a player taking a lot of criticism, we see it from Greg and Langley and countless others about Elias Pettersson, loud Titans fan too. And there are some, though, like Fish Dancer and others saying they thought Pettersson played okay. I mean, he had the primary assist on the lone goal on the power play, but everybody's talking about that chance, right, in the third period. Gets sprung by Filip Peronik and a great chance bearing in on Vimelka and shoots it like a few feet above the net. And it just, you know, shows you the lack of confidence he's had in not hitting the net, which is, you know, a symptom for this entire team these past couple of games, but especially here tonight. But you want to see Pettersson bury a goal in a big moment, and that's just not happening right now.
No, it's not. And the third period, I thought it was actually better from him. We saw a little bit more speed through the neutral zone when it was that, you know, that he picks up the puck in his own zone at the blue line and then attacks with speed. You're like, all right, there's a little bit of something that we've seen before. He drew two players towards him and created a chance for Tyler Myers. Saying, all right, that's Elias Pettersson. That's the confidence that we've seen in the past. But their moments, their flashes, they're not consistent. That chance you talk about, yeah, of course, you know, you get a chance like that, you expect your star player to bury it because it's such an important part of the game. And a couple of things. So the good, we saw him create opportunities. We saw a little bit more speed in the third period. But there was also other moments, guys, where it looked like he had a shooting lane on two opportunities. And there was one sequence with Nils Höglander where they're going back and forth, back and forth. And rather than taking the shot where it looked like Marino had maybe gone too far towards Nils Höglander, opened up the middle of the ice, Pettersson doesn't shoot there, and he goes back to Nils Höglander. The puck is deflected. It goes off the playing surface. And yet again, that lack of confidence where if, you know, the coverage gives you a little bit, a half a second extra, you know, Elias Pettersson, when he's confident, when he's, you know, a couple of years ago, he's going top corner with that shot. He's ripping it past the goaltender, at least trying. This was just kind of deferring yet again. So even though we saw some good in this game, you know, a little bit more speed, a little bit more confidence carrying the puck, there's still so many moments where he's deferring. And if you're the top dog, and if you've got that shot historically that can really change the game and beat goaltenders with ease, I want to see him, you know, shoot the puck, and it simply didn't happen tonight. Even in those moments, and listen, he scores that goal, we might be having a different tune. We might be talking about a Canucks win, but that's the fine line, right, of being a hero in a city or kind of a zero at times. And, you know, he doesn't score there. He raises the puck too much. And unfortunately, I thought it was in certain ways a step in the right direction. But, you know, this is a league about finishing. You got to get the results, and unfortunately he didn't.
And it's not just Elias Pettersson too, right? Like there's other guys, Brock Besser.
Sure.
Sportsnet Stats just tweeted this as well. Canucks have scored an NHL low 2.1 goals per game since January 1st. So far in this calendar year. And I know goals per game across the league, you know, trended a bit down a little bit, but still like 2.1 in whatever era you put it in is going to be very difficult.
Guys, 9 goals in the last 5 games, and I've mentioned, you know, Elias Pettersson, what he's got now 7 points in the last 17 games, but you're right, it's not only him. You know, Brock Besser, we talk about his ability, he's not scoring at the same rate. He's below 30 goal pace now, well below that as of right now. You start looking at, you know, Jake DeBrusk is starting to pick it up here, but anybody that's playing in the top 9 right now, Dakota Joshua, 1 point in the last 14 games. Kiefer Sherwood had a great assist last game, but he's got 0 goals in the last 10 games. And I have a little bit more leeway, obviously, for players that are further down the lineup, but this does compound at some point in time where if Pettersson's not scoring, if, you know, Besser's not scoring, if you're not getting that production from Kiefer Sherwood, who's playing in the top six right now, it's going to take a toll. And a part of this was also early on in this game, guys, they weren't able to get zone time. They weren't able to get the puck out of their zone cleanly. They were kind of, you know, they weren't hanging on to the puck, as Rick Tocchet mentioned that he wanted his team to do so. So I think it does start with that. They weren't playing a fast game. We start to see a little bit more of that maybe in the third period. Pettersson gets that chance. But I think it's, you know, that we can say it has a lot to do with Quinn Hughes because he's the X factor. He can freestyle. He can create opportunities. He's one of the league leaders in stretch passes in the NHL. So he's able to create in various ways. But that makes it so important where when you do get, you know, some chances in a game, whether it's Pew Suter in the last game and Aiden Hill makes that save, or it's Elias Pettersson in this game, you got to take advantage. You got to finish.
Well, I'll pose this to both of you too, just because, you know, we've seen, like, especially after that bubble playoffs, like they went to park the bus a little bit in that Vegas series and they came back and they played similar to that way. It doesn't feel like they're playing quite park the bus level of hockey, but man, it is low event and it makes the offensive opportunity so difficult to challenge, to create, but it doesn't look like they're like deliberately playing as negative as they were back then. And so like it makes that gap of like, how do you create offense feel so odd, because it doesn't look like they're playing that park the bus style that we've seen previously.
No, it seems like they're actually trying, but I think in those moments where you have those nerves and you're feeling pressure, they're deferring to, all right, hey, we want to take chances. We want to carry the puck, but you're feeling pressure in the neutral zone, and therefore you flip it into the offensive zone, and boom, you're kind of kill your own attack. And I thought, especially in the second period, after Utah ended up scoring that tying goal by Logan Cooley, they actually did a much better job of being aggressive on the forecheck and seeing there's a weakness in Vancouver's game to be like, all right, they can't move the puck as cleanly as we've seen in the past. They're going to flip it up into the air. They're going to flip it into the zone. And you saw defensemen like Marino step up into the neutral zone and attack players like Brock Besser. And, you know, I thought the opposition is now reacting as well to say, hey, you don't have your elite puck-moving defensemen, so we're going to kind of just ramp it up a little bit more. And this strikes me as a team right now that's not, even though the record without Quinn Hughes is not, we talked about it, 3-2-1 now. Obviously, prior to the Four Nations face-off, it was a lot better. But I think teams are adjusting, right? They're finding ways to really ratchet up the pressure on Vancouver, and that's why we're seeing, even though they were able to get shots in the third period against Vegas, 15 shots tonight, shows you that they're not a confident bunch right now offensively.
No, certainly not. And we'll see if that changes in any significant way when Quinn Hughes comes back. But, you know, a lot of the same storylines here for the Canucks. Lack of offense and just not generating enough. And we'll hear what the coach has to say about it as well when he meets with the media here shortly. I guess the most positive thing about this game was Artur Shelov's. He had a really rough start to the campaign, right? Got sent down when Demko was healthy to return. And we haven't seen him for a while, but this is about as good as he's looked all season.
For sure. And that was first start since November 27th, which it's been a while. It was that Pittsburgh game where he allowed 5 goals and the confidence was at a very, very low. And, you know, look at the saves that he made in the third period, especially. I go back to that. There was a Josh Doan opportunity. It was a partial breakaway. There's a couple of saves, a deflection save. There was quick reaction. And even though it wasn't the prettiest or maybe the most confident at certain times, he ends up making the save. And that's what the role of a backup goaltender is. Do you give your team a chance to win? And tonight, guys, it was almost identical to the Kevin Lankinen game against Vegas. Of course, Lankinen maybe makes some more highlight reel saves. He looks a little bit more confident in the crease. But Shelov gave his team a chance to win. He kept them in it. And, you know, the lack of offense and the lack of generation of offense was the downfall in this game. But I like that. I think this is a player who's been playing well in Abbotsford. He's got some confidence in his game. He's able to, you know, work on his technique and work on what he needed to improve. And we didn't see those cracks necessarily where, you know, he was competing hard and he made very different types of saves, whether it was, you know, in transition, whether there were one-time chances on the power play, whether it was fighting through traffic and making a save. So I think for, you know, Shelov, he did what he needed to do. He gave his team a chance, and that's, you're right, it's the most positive thing from tonight. And hopefully, you know, in the next game, whether it's the Anaheim game, I would suspect he plays that one as well. He can carry that on and get a 2 points in the next one.
It was just 13:56, but we got our first impressions of Victor Mancini. What impression did he leave for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, a couple of things. I thought there were some moments where he was a little, you know, he was caught by the forecheck early on in the game. So a little bit simplified game for him early. You could see that it was just, at times, it was, all right, just release the pressure. Doesn't maybe have the full kind of game speed at the NHL level as of yet, but I thought he played a pretty simple game. It's your first game with the new team. We saw a couple of moments actually in the offensive zone where there was, you know, he gets a look. He's not afraid to take the shot. I think there was one that was deflected and he didn't go on net, but he was not exactly, you know, a guy that's nervous about taking a shot. He sees the opening, he'll take it. But I think as the game went on, he got better. He was a little bit more comfortable making a play, being a little bit more poised as the game went on. But I thought early on there was some maybe some jitters, some nervousness there. Maybe the forecheck caught him. So I think it was a decent start. I'm curious to see if they go back to him or if Carson Soucy's in the next game. Obviously, with Soucy being a lefty on the right-hand side is not ideal. It's not what Rick Tocchet wants. You know, that's not the way he plays, but still the veteran defenseman. And with Mancini, I think, you know, it was a decent start, but I'm not going to lie and tell you, you know, it was wowed. I think it was a decent game for him with plenty to work on.
Yeah, I think you're being nice. Yeah, it's the first game. You try to get
I'm like, I'm not going to be overly critical.
No, of course.
It is that first game.
Exactly. That's all it is, right? Especially on the road and all that. But yeah, his first game, and hopefully we see better from him as he continues his career with the Canucks. But Randeep, great stuff as always, man. And hopefully we have better things to talk about when we chat on Wednesday.
That's right, and I can't wait for IMAC on the show. It's must listen to. It's like the cherry on top of the ice cream, boys. IMAC on the show tonight.
Well played. Love it, Randeep. Great stuff.
Cheers, boys.
That is Randeep Janda, and that's your game review. Need more power and efficiency in your lineup? Meet the 2025 Honda CR-V Hybrid. We're raised from 2.49%. Visit bchonda.ca. And, you know, I think on the good part of tonight's game, it really was Artur Shelas. But what's frustrating at the same time is the Canucks wasted a great Lankanen performance last night, and then tonight wasted another great performance, this one from Artur Shelas. And in doing so, they have now coughed up their lead on the Calgary Flames, essentially. Calgary beat the San Jose Sharks, so they're now 1 point back of Vancouver with a game in hand. So if Calgary wins their game in hand, they're back ahead of Vancouver all of a sudden. So they had a 3-point lead heading into the break, the Canucks on the Calgary Flames with the same amount of games played, and that's almost gone. Like, it's, you know, it doesn't take much, right? So now you're kind of back to being in that dogfight. And I guess you could say you're still in the dogfight. 3 points isn't that big of a gap, but it just shows you how quickly that can change, right?
Yeah, it's still a nine-team race here. I guess we can include 10 now with Utah winning this game against you. So you're in this 10-team race here. You know, the LA Kings haven't necessarily pulled away, but they have some games in hand there, but this is the reality of being in that wild card chase. Last year was much easier, right? You were pacing the Pacific Division and you were almost just running your own race and focus on yourself. And now you're scoreboard watching every night. And does that add extra pressure of, okay, Calgary did this against San Jose. We've got LA coming up in a couple of days. Teams are even going to create even more separation in that time because we're off till Wednesday. And it's all these things that just make it difficult. And we've talked about this too, of their schedule is going to get heavier and harder in the second part of the season, and you didn't bank enough points. You weren't playing with any level of consistency, and all those blown leads earlier in the season really start to hurt now rather than having those points banked. Like all those, like even just a shootout win here or there, or those points where you can get it to overtime and get an OT.
Well, all those OT losses, like if you picked up like three or four in regulation.
Just killer.
Or
just
like
killer.
Just three or four of those losses, right? And we're not even talking about winning half, just three or four more of them, right? But they've really been unable to do that. Mike from Thunder Bay says, same story as last night. Didn't Tocchet tell them what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? Good luck next game, boys. Leaf says, they're not parking the bus. However, their play is more frustrating than the slow Corolla in the carpool lane. That's a good one from Leaf.
But it's always a Corolla, too, isn't it?
It is, right? It's, I mean, you know, I'm not going to get into it.
Get to the right lane.
And Leaf also mentioned, the Canucks enjoyed their time off too much. They came back fat and happy. maybe after. I mean, I don't know it's that or not, but it's...
But the thing is, like, more than anything, like, you're just in a rhythm, right? When you're, like, you have that adrenaline from the trade and things are just fresh and everything's just kind of working. And they legit were playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And it was mildly exciting. And you see Filipino, you're like, oh, yeah, there's some things here. Joe Connor had a couple of goals. They win 3 in a row. Colorado, Toronto. It's decent. Again, they weren't scoring a lot, but it looked connected. Even defensively, it looked really strong. So you can be excited about that sort of stuff. And then you just halt the brakes, and we get this awesome hockey over Four Nations. We got to come back. And you knew there was going to be a big discrepancy over what we were watching with Four Nations to what we're watching here. But this is, like, stark, man. It's unfair to compare, but it's also unfair for us to watch sometimes. Yeah. Say, like, no, NHL hockey is better than this. And it is.
Yeah, it hasn't been very good, right? Pardeep says this team is not even capable of playing north-south hockey with their forwards. Quinn is the only player to move the puck up quickly with offensive flair. JT was capable of driving play, but we traded him. A year and a half of waiting for PD to find his game is untenable. At what point does management or Tocchet take the kid gloves off with him? That's Pardeep. I do think the kid gloves are essentially off.
Like, they've been
really
openly criticizing him, blaming him and JT Miller for the situation of the team. His name is consistently in the rumor mill.
Giving him no outs on injuries.
That's the public stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
it's like,
I don't know what you, like, what more do you want? I think, like, the thing people want is, like, Patrick Alvina or Rick Tocchet to take a microphone and, like, yell, like, your frustrations, like, mimic your frustrations. That's not... It's not reality.
Yeah, no, I know. It's not that simple, right? And now Ian says Patterson had an assist. He's skating miles, looks a bit closer. So there are people that like Patterson's game. Again, he had an assist. He had some moments. But this is what we talked about before. Like,
but what's
moments.
The visual memory from this game?
Missing the breakaway
That's
chance.
That's the thing. And then the power play.
Yeah.
Not shooting.
Yeah.
Like those, again, he had the primary assist on the only goal.
He passed it off to Hoglander when he's in the slot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like, I didn't think he was awful tonight. Certainly relative to what we've seen so far from this season, and certainly relative to what the rest of the players for the Canucks tonight. But, like, what's the thing that's going to stand out from this game? The visual memory is going to be him missing the net on the power play in a game where you're not scoring it, or him missing the net on the breakaway in a game where you're not scoring enough.
Yeah.
And you're not generating any chances with the backdrop of the contract and the struggles already this year. That's what people are going to remember, and that's, like, your feelings are justified.
No, I totally get it. And a guy who's taking more criticism, Amrit, says Rick Tocchet has no business being back next season, and even others who texted in and said, you know, I'm a Rick Tocchet backer, but, you know, we have to put some more heat on what's going on with Rick Tocchet, because we can sit here and talk about whether they have the right pieces or not, but one thing is very consistent. The head coach, and we'll hear from him coming up in a little bit here and see what he has to say, but I'm sure he'll say a lot of similar things to what he's been saying for a long time and what he mentioned last night. Now, after the trades happened and they had the 3-0-1 stretch without Quinn Hughes and Pettersson and they played well, Ian says, was that the post-trade honeymoon? Is it over? Like, perhaps, right? Like, they had the energy, they played really well, they looked solid, but it was, can you carry that over, right? And it hasn't happened. And last night, we saw what happened in that game. We heard what the coach had to say. And tonight, very similar again to last night. Have they reverted back to being that toothless type of team that doesn't know when to do what? And the coach is saying the same things. So how come the message isn't getting through? Whose fault is that, right? It's fair to ask, why is a coach saying the same things and the players aren't executing? And you can be fair in saying it comes down to personnel to some extent, because then we're sitting here talking about Pettersson and some other guys. But it's fair when the same things keep happening. Why do they keep happening? You keep saying the same things. It's like, why are we in the same situation consistently?
Yeah,
even Marty Red said, like, I'll be the first to say I like talk, but at what point do we put heat on him and wonder about his coaching style? I mean, it's fair to ask because we're seeing the same things happen repeatedly.
Yeah, and man, like, it's just a tough environment right now, right? Because you can talk about the talent, right? Is he supposed to create Drew O'Connor into a 20-goal scorer, 25-goal scorer? Again, like, all the stuff is one part of the conversation. But how are you helping it all? And it's like, that's the struggle right now. I don't know if there's good solutions at hand right now for Rick Tocchet.
What I also think what you're seeing, too, is, like, there has been significantly less production from a lot of key players. And Connor Garland's game has fallen off a cliff recently. Again, another rough game from him. So he's not being the play driver anymore. Now it's gone. So, like, it shows you what happens when all of a sudden Garland's not going. And I'm not putting that on the head coach, but, you know, you have a lot of these guys underperforming. Besser and Hedl, I think, tonight had some good moments. Hedl did at the very least, but the bottom line, it's not there, these games. Like, he's doing a lot, but also not getting that final bounce. It's like, okay, like, where is the offense going to come from?
And 5 games away from the deadline here, it feels like, you said it great last night, that it felt like the pre-trade Canucks, where it felt static, it felt lethargic, and just what we saw prior to the January 31st. And here we are 5 days away for 5 games away from the deadline. And if you know, the thing I just feel like more than anything, it feels like we're watching a team that's waiting for something to happen again.
Whether the next trade happening, or
whether it's Brock Besser
or Pedersen,
whatever it is, you have that feeling again of like they all see that it's just, you know, March 7th is not that far away. What are we, 12 days away, 13 days away from March 7th? It's not that far away. And it's just like, it feels static all over again.
And we were talking about this last night, and somebody called in and said it would be malpractice if they keep Besser as their own rental. It really would feel like it right now. Like, what are you going to see the next 5 games to make you feel like, yeah, keeping Besser as your own rental makes sense? It doesn't make any sense at all. And again, I think you can move Besser and still be in the quote-unquote playoff race the rest of the season by doing some other things. But, you know, we can get into that a bit more as the show goes on here. But, you know, the more we've seen these 2 games, and again, like, first 2 games back from the break, 25 remaining. But to your point, the games aren't getting easier. And the Canucks haven't banked enough enough points, nor enough credibility with the fans generally, that you feel confident that they can just, you know, get going eventually here. Like, every loss is a big one at this stage, and every victory is even more important. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And yeah, a lot of reaction. We'll get to more of it as the show goes on. We will hear from the Canucks head coach, Canuck players, plus IMAC, and we'll talk about ice cream, because IMAC was eating ice cream and it looked very good. And now I want ice cream. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We get to more of it.
Text us your favorite ice cream flavor.
Or what ice cream flavor does this game remind you of? Or what ice cream flavor best describes the Canucks right now? Or we can have some fun with it here, because, yeah, the game itself was not the most fun game for your Vancouver Canucks. All right, you are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. More coming up next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to the line for Nick Schmaltz. Middle of the point, Mikhail Sergachev. Left boards, Clayton Keller to Schmaltz. Right side, through to the goal. Tip, they score! Dylan Guenther! Guenther scores his team-leading 21st of the year, and Utah leads 2-1 with 5:53 left in regulation time.
And this is unfortunate for Artur Shelov, because he made a heck of a save right before this, but Schmaltz this time goes to the right-hand side, ends up making the pass cross ice to Dylan Guenther, who's on the far post, and he deflects it home. Philip Ronan can't get there in time to get body position or tie up a stick, and that's an easy redirect for Dylan Guenther, who's all by himself to finish off that play, as it is now 2-1 Utah.
Dylan Guenther coming back to haunting the Canucks yet again. Game-winning goal against the team that traded away the draft pick that he was ultimately selected with by the Arizona Coyotes, and now part of the Utah Hockey Club. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. And we'll get to more of your texts coming up in a little bit, especially about how the team has been struggling. A lot of people have opinions and frustrations, and we'll talk through all that with you as the show goes on. And at the same time, we're trying to have some levity and try to have some fun here. And they lost 2 games. There's been not a lot of excitement in how they played hockey these 2 games and back-to-back nights, but we were inspired by Ian McIntyre eating ice cream on the broadcast. He was caught sitting down and just locked in eating his ice cream as...
It wasn't quite George Costanza-esque.
No, it wasn't quite, but he was locked in. He was so into enjoying that ice cream that nothing around the world mattered.
I'll make another Seinfeld reference. It's like when Kramer spots Joe DiMaggio eating donuts, and he's like, he's just so focused. No matter what it is, woo! Woo! Joe!
Joe!
Like he's so focused on the donuts.
Didn't
like,
matter.
That was Ian.
Shorty and DT clearly talking and, you know, in front of the microphones and the camera for the broadcast. And IMAC locked in. So we asked, what ice cream flavor best describes the Canucks right now? Andy in Vancouver, very succinct and says, fudge. It was like Rob Ray, yes, last night. What did he say?
Ah, fudge. I trusted you, but I was a little worried there.
I was being careful. Yeah, Adam from Kelowna, can you ask IMAC what flavor? Well, IMAC did tell us what flavor. He put it out on social media.
Yes, it was pistachio. One scoop pistachio, one scoop caramel mocha. So there you go. But we'll have some fun with Ian later.
Yeah, and it's also about your opinions. I mean, we can talk ice creams as much as you want. Really.
Ice cream's great. What's not to love? I'll read this one from Mike in Surrey. Anger management.
Ooh, that's good. I like
there
that.
There you go. That one's strong.
I like it. Well done, Mike. Well done. That's a good, funny one. We joke about the jokes, and so to speak, but there's also lots of frustration. There's one from somebody who texted in and said, it's unsigned. It says, you know, that's it. I'm done. Oh, it's Sean saying, that's it. I'm done. I've had it with Pettersson. He's Louis Erickson times two. Trade him for bag of pucks for all I care. I'll take what's next. I'm done. I'm waving the flag. And there's somebody else who said, like, I've been the biggest. I yelled at my TV when PD just held the puck and didn't shoot. I've sported him all along. I'm done. Forget him. It's done. I could care less about confidence. This is the NHL. You're eating $11.6 million of our cap, score or leave. So there is a lot of that in the text inbox. And it's like your nightly check-in on the Elias Pettersson commentary. And it's like this generally 80, 90% of the time. So it is what it is, right?
And 80, 90% of the texts look that way when you know the team's not winning and in the big moments he's missing the net.
We've
chatted here about the talent evaluation of Elias Pettersson, and again we've seen the high, so for someone like me, I'm willing to play the long game and say I do think there's going to be a better version of it at some point. I'm not going to put a date on it, but at some point, it's like we've seen the talent. But there's no denying what's happening right now. It's plain awful. Plain awful right now. And you need him. Not only do you need him just to be at a certain level, you need the best version of himself right now. And we are so far from that spot that it makes it difficult to see, like, okay, what is the importance or... What impact are you going to have for the remaining part of this season? And like that part, like even I would have a conversation with myself in the mirror. It's like, Bick, tomorrow you're going to talk about Elias Pettersson. And it's like, do you think he's going to come back? It's like, if you say yes, it's like you're living in a fantasy land.
Well, there's nothing that suggests he's going to be back. It's just a hope and a prayer for
season,
now,
like,
this season.
Definitely for this season. It's for like, sure. Man, like
I'll repeat myself again. I believe that Elias Pettersson is going to regain his game.
Yeah.
Whether it happens in Vancouver or not is a question. And that's a question management is going to decide, right? Like that's what they're going to decide. This season, however, we might see moments, we might see a stretch, but as far as him finding and being back this year, it's not happening. It does another offseason get you there, perhaps, but how much longer do you want to wait as a team? You know, we're talking about a full calendar year now. We're not talking about a few months, a few weeks, or a few struggles here and there. This is kind of going from last year's All-Star break all the way until now, and it includes playoffs and two seasons. So it's not an insignificant sample size we're talking about here. Now, we'll get to more of your reaction as the show goes on. A lot of it coming in, of course. We'll try to have some fun as well. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach, Rick Tocchet. And here he is at the podium postgame after a loss against the Utah Hockey Club 2-1 tonight. And here he is meeting with the media.
Back-to-back frustrating games. What just led to the outcome in this one tonight?
Well, the frustrating part, I think, is like we had 21 block shots. Or I think it was 15 missed shots. That's... 30-something chances that, you know, we're struggling to score goals, but you got to move your feet, you got to change angles, you got to hit the net. That's a big number for a team that's not scoring. So I'd rather guys just take a little bit off it, hit the net, and get people in net, because, you know, we're double clutching, and I think that's a lack of confidence. So we got to take a couple of days here and figure this out.
You give Kevin Lankinen a break. Arthur Shilov steps in, he makes 30 saves tonight. Do you like his performance?
Yeah, he was really good. I'm really proud of him. You know, he's had a tough year to be at the start. That was a good start for him.
How difficult is it to get into a rhythm, Rick, when there's another three penalties in the first period?
Yeah, three penalties, and then, you know, when you don't score, you magnify. Obviously, you know, you can't take a penalty there with 6 minutes left. You can't hold a guy. So like I said, when you don't score goals, everything's magnified.
Rick, did it feel like the same game in some ways? I mean, the penalties sort of kill your flow. You get the early goal, but ultimately it just seemed like the amount of chances they were getting, kind of inevitably they were going to get one or two.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. Like I said, you know, when you get shots through to the net, and when you hit the net or you don't get your shots blocked, you're going to get possession time. So it's not one and done. So our shot selection, we have guys double clutching right now, and you know, these next 2 days we're going to have to figure it out here at practice, get some confidence on some guys.
It wasn't like there was an overwhelming number of chances, but your defense has sort of been culpable on all seven of the sort of power play opportunities you've given your opponents this weekend. Is there something there in terms of needing to preserve sort of the structural game you're playing, but do it more discipline?
In the penalties, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, you got to pick your spots to do certain things. You know, like, you know, you cannot grab anybody. It's just, you know, I'd rather let them go in the corner than have the battle in the corner. So, yeah. The too many men, yeah. There's a lot of penalties from the D, and we got to sort that out.
That is Canucks head coach Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tile Town. From vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. So pretty quick availability from the coach, but a lot of the same stuff he said before. Guys, you know, don't have confidence or double clutching, have to practice and get out of it. I mean, he's not saying the same things every game, but it all sounds the same after every loss, right, where they're played this way.
All the commentary is born from the same place.
Yeah. No, it is.
Right? And, you know, when you hear Rick talking, it's like, oh, that makes it seem so easy. It's just take a little bit off that shot and double clutching. And, you know, that's great, but it has to translate to what's happening on the ice, and it's not happening on the ice. And so the same frustrations, again, are born from the same place of it's not creative enough. And so, like, I start to wonder if that's consistent language. Is it almost too much? It's like, hey, holding on to the puck too much. Try to make something happen. So you try to make something happen. And again, 36 shots that missed and blocked. And a lot of stick blocks today. Like Ian Cole had a couple. Sergachev had a couple. Mm-hmm. You know, when we think of blocked shots, you think of like a Chris Tanev selling out and off the knees and away it goes. But it was a lot of just stick checks today. And there you are. Just like, oh. Yeah, we didn't have enough offensive opportunities just because we're not changing the angles enough. So now that's another thing we're going to be keeping an eye on. It's like, change the shooting angles.
Well, as you see it, I mean, how many Brock Besser shots were blocked tonight?
Let me bring this up for you here. He had four blocked and another one that missed the net. Okay. Sorry, three that blocked and another one that missed the net.
Yeah, and I know all three of those shots that were blocked, too. They all came from the same spot, too.
Yeah.
And right into a defender's
Connor Garland had five blocked tonight. Yeah. Tyler Myers, Kiefer Sherwood, Elias Pettersson, and Derek Forbert each had two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, give Utah credit for eating pucks and getting in lanes, but you got to find ways to get shots through. These guys struggle, and it goes back to, again, last year in the second half and in the postseason. They couldn't get shots on goal consistently. They're not doing it now. And what the coach talked about this during the playoffs last year, about holding on to pucks, make plays, beat their defense, meet pressure with pressure, make plays. It's the same stuff again.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's like, that leads to the frustration too, because it's the same stuff that repeatedly happens. And the coach is identifying the same thing, but it's like, why aren't you able to get them to do something different? Is it because the players are incapable, or is it because you can't get through to them?
And especially when like so much emphasis for them is put on, you know, layered screens, not necessarily just getting bodies in at the top of the crease, yeah, but create layers. And if you're spreading guys out and you got room to operate in the slot away from the puck, can you roll off bodies and get to pucks that are loose into that pivotal high-value area on rebounds? And so what has to happen is the puck's got to get through, right? You got your tip opportunity when the shot goes through, but then do you fight through the contact to find the next opportunity for the rebounds? Or, you know, broken plays in the middle of the scramble plays, I think they is the term they like to use. Well, the puck's not getting there.
Yeah.
The initial attempt, so you have to work so hard just to get to the prime areas of the ice, and you're fighting and you're trying to get your stick free for potential tips, and the puck never gets there.
Mm-hmm.
And now suddenly it's three guys that got to defend off the rush all of a sudden. It's just, it's so difficult.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, the guys in the bottom of the lineup, like we were talking here a lot about Elias Pettersson and his lack of production, no doubt, right? Connor Garland's been ice cold too. He has 3 points in his last 12 games, 9 points in his last 29. Sherwood has slowed down, but I mean, he's making 1.5. I think he's kind of hit a career high in goals. Like,
yeah,
he's already done what he needs to do. What are you expecting from guys like Bluger? I mean, a guy that's going to be in the high 20-point range. Like, he's a fourth-line center that can play third-line center minutes for you, but that's kind of what he is, right? There is, and I think those guys have brought what they need to bring, but it comes down to the higher-paid guys. Dakota Joshua, right? And hey, we know he's gone through a lot of challenges, but his offense hasn't been there. I mean, these are your highest-paid forwards right now, and they're just not producing. The only two guys that have been somewhat consistently have been Jake DeBrusk and even Brock Besser. I know he's going through some struggles, but if you look at the totality and the point totals he's had, the goals he's scored, like, he's kind of done his job to some extent, production-wise. Same with Jake DeBrusk. But the other guys really haven't, and they're not.
It's because of some of those guys, too, that you mentioned, if we just go through the top six, like, DeBrusk is a, you know, top six player, but is he a play driver? No, he's a complimentary piece to another guy that's firing. And so, okay, DeBrusk gets his 21st goal of the year. He's kind of doing his job, but it's in a silo because he's not someone that's going to drive play. Mm-hmm. He for Sherwood is like doing a job, and I like his spot right now with Elias Pettersson because he's got energy. He gets in on the forecheck. We know the hits can recover pucks, but you know, Drew O'Connor is similar in a Kiefer Sherwood mold. Brock Besser is someone that's meant to drive play, but that's not really Brock's game.
No,
he's more like a bona fide or an elevated DeBrusk.
For sure. And listen, I like all of these guys. I mean, again, the Drew O'Connor contract, we'll see how it ages.
That just sounds cool.
It does sound cool. But like 2.5.
And
again,
if he was from Long Beach, DOC from LBC, yeah, it'll be great.
So 2.5, like I said, I mean, I don't know if I love the number. I like a lot of what he brings, but it's more like, can he be consistent or not? But nonetheless, whatever, it's 2.5. And I'm fine with these guys because they're playing bottom of the lineup roles. But there's a lack of diversity in terms of attacking players with how they are built. They're very much a checking team that's not even checking all that consistently right now or as well. But you're right. Like, where is the skill, right? And where is the speed and the attack? Like, the attack came from Drew O'Connor. Again, now that's slowed down. Hedl is doing everything he can, but it's one guy, essentially,
the
right?
The four guys you would look at, or the five guys you would look at, Brock Besser, Filip Hedl, Elias Pettersson, Connor Garland, Nils Höglander.
Yeah, and right now, Höglander doesn't have the coach's trust. He's playing down the lineup, right? Garland, we just went through. He's had some struggles. He's gone through a real cold period. It's actually 9 points in 30 games, so it's a real struggle for him to create any offense right now. We know all about Pettersson. DeBrusk is doing his thing. Besser is, but you're lacking another forward.
You can probably throw a Dakota Joshua in there as well.
Exactly, but like those are the guys that are struggling, but they're also still lacking at least one play-driving impact forward. We've been talking about this a lot. Like, they need at least one more impact forward. That's just to get you to, like, okay, now you're a legit playoff team that can do something. If you want to be your legit cup contender,
middle of the road offensive team,
right? But if you want to be a legit cup contender, there's even more that needs to be, you know, added to the team. And now you can talk yourself into next year, maybe Lekker Mäki steps up and you find ways to add a bit more. But as far as this year is concerned, I don't want to hear anything about this team being a dark horse anything in the playoffs unless they add an impact player. And it makes zero sense if you don't have another impact guy to hold on to Brock Besser and have him as your own rental.
It's
peak foolishness.
Yeah, the only path to victory right now, as far as like gameplay style, is this low event nature. So how much belief do you have that you can do this 16 times in the playoff? It's pretty low for me.
Yeah,
so you may as well just lean into the bit and say, well, we have to keep being low event and find ways in the future to become high event.
Yeah.
And so to add to your point, it's like, okay, well, what's the value in Brock Besser in that moment then? Is the return that we're going to get higher than the probability of having success with Brock Besser? And I was like, yeah, probably. The value in what you can get in the player, just because you have an expiration date on this. Mm-hmm. It's five more games before you got to make a decision. That's it.
Yeah.
So you probably have to make a decision to say, hey, we have to get and activate to a new timeline of finding out more dynamic players, mm-hmm. whether it's Lekker Mäki. Obviously, there's a long runway there, 8-9 years before he gets to unrestricted free agency. But like, you have to get onto that timeline all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And that's a scenario here. And we had a text here. Sorry if I forgot who it was. Someone texted me like, what are you going to get for a Soucy or a Besser in a trade package? Well, we talked about Besser yesterday. You know, the hope would be first-round value, if not a first-round pick.
But that
it's more about, like, a second in a package. And that, to me, is, like, the reality that probably exists. And, again, this is someone that's going to be – you can make an argument for, like, $60 million in free agency.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily believe someone's going to give it to him, but there's an argument to be made for it.
That's what his camp is looking at and saying, right? Like, that's kind of where it's at. And that's what makes it even more complicated. But like I mentioned yesterday, I think if the Canucks go to 7 years, around $7-something, get to $50 million, I think Besser would do that and stay. That's my take on it. Are the Canucks even willing to go there? That's going to be the question, right? And we're now under 2 weeks away from the deadline. And based if you're trying to wait for these games, so you're going to wait five more games before the deadline, and they're going to inform you anything different than what you already know? I'm skeptical. You know, that whole thing just doesn't make sense to me. If that's actually how you're going about things, I think it's foolish again. But I don't know if that is necessarily how they're going to go about it. But, you know, we'll see. You can consider things. But
and plus, just the language. Like, just in particular with someone like Besser, they've used language like, oh, still in the evaluation phase. It's like, you've seen for 200-plus games. Like, what more of an evaluation?
It's like you've been dating someone for 8 years and be like, yeah, are you guys going to get married? I don't know. We're still, you know, thinking about it. You've been together for 8 years. You should probably know what's going on. You know what I mean? That's kind of where it's at, more than anything else. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, so somebody was asking us as well, I think it was Steve-O and Sanich, how many did they have blocked or missed on net tonight, for instance? Well, the Canucks had 51 shot attempts tonight, 15 made it on goal.
Man,
15 out of 51.
It's tough.
Yeah.
That's so just tough to live in that reality. I'll bring this up. I'll see if I can do some math here in the breaks here. I won't do it live on the air.
Don't hurt yourself.
But as far as like which teams struggle the most to actually get their shots on net. So I'll try to see if I can do that before the end of the night.
Yeah. Mike in his car says, you guys really think Besser is worth that? What's the last time he scored a meaningful goal? Well, he did score some meaningful goals in the playoffs, and he's on a decent goal scoring rate. He's on pace for over an 82-game season for 30 goals. Like, he's been fine. Like, offensively, he's been fine. There aren't a lot of trade targets, especially right-handed goal scorers. Like, whether it's an actual first-round pick or not, but it's going to be that type of value. Like, That's kind of where it's at.
As Eddie just said to me, it's like he just scored the game winner against Toronto.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's had a few big goals.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a few. And I agree. Like, you're not getting this astronomical value, but you're getting something. All right.
Susie? I don't know. It just feels like a...
I think it's like a third at best.
Yeah.
You know, Calgary's been interested, right? Would Vancouver be able to get their third-round pick back from Calgary that they gave up last year in one of the trades to the Flames? That's kind of like, you know.
Are you specifically looking for your own third round pick, not just any third round pick?
I would rather get my own third round pick because it gives you some offer sheet options.
Oh.
But I don't know about this offseason again.
That'd be interesting.
But it's one of those things, right? Like, I don't know if it's anything higher than that. And that might be high. Yeah. Maybe it's more of a four or five. Like, it could be on that range. But
just because the extra year you're taking on some money.
I think the high end is a third. It might be more of a four.
I think there's a better player. Like, we saw a pretty decent player. Last year.
I'd rather hang on to him and have him rebuild value, so to speak, and trade him in the offseason, but I think you have to move him this summer. Like, but there's no way, unless you're moving a bunch of other money, like, you can't have that money on the back end next year.
As far as, too, like, the Besser value, like, as far as just rentals, right? Maybe something bigger happens, but the overall rental market is kind of low. Like, okay, maybe Mikko Rantanen goes on there again, but, like, Nick Ehlers isn't going to become available. It's not like John Tavares is going to become available. Granlund's already been traded. Marner's not going to move. Just going through this here, like, what other guys, like, really excite you if you're shopping on the market? Like, Brock Nelson's name, obviously. But if you're looking for solutions, if you're a playoff team, says, okay, we have to shop and try to get an injection of talent into our lineup here. The names are very, very slim as far as the rentals. So the scarcity might boost Brock Besser's value. Like, that would be the hope.
Yeah, and the Canucks could, because the Canucks have plenty of cap space, they can easily retain half the salary as well.
Easily.
So there's a lot of things they can do here. Now, obviously, they can still sign him as well. But again, I'm saying if you're going to sign him, fine, sign him. But don't hold on to him past the deadline if you're not signing him. That, to me, just, I'm not with it. Tarek in Kingston says, yes, not enough offensive skill. You can't score. You can't win. Simple. What do we expect with Miller gone? Need to make a big move. Need two impact guys. So that's one text coming in. All right. A lot more of your thoughts. We'll get more of those on the other side of the break, and we'll get to some more reaction from Canuck players, and we'll have some more fun. A lot of people have been texting in ice cream flavors that best describe this game here tonight, Bick, and there's been some pretty funny ones. There's one here that says, it's vanilla ice cream, but like the lid wasn't put on properly, and it's been in the back of the freezer for a few months, and it's freezer burnt, and depending on who you are, it's either for trash or good for one more regrettable bowl. Very descriptive, but I get what you're talking about.
Before we go to break, I'll read a couple here, too, as far as the ice cream flavors. We're doing this because of iMac.
Yes.
Who was caught on the broadcast. Not caught on the broadcast. He was on the broadcast in the background. Crushing a bowl of ice cream. This one. A couple of people have texted this one. Chocolat.
Chocolat.
That's pretty good.
I see you working.
That's really strong. And also Leaf texted in pumpkin ice cream because time is up for this group.
Yeah.
Get creative with it.
I love it. All right.
Although I'm not sure pumpkin ice cream a thing?
I don't know.
That does not sound delicious.
I'm sure somebody makes it somewhere. Yeah. I'm sure there's some pumpkin ice cream. All right. Fantastic stuff. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. If you want to grab a phone line, you can. 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. Canucks lose 2-1 in Utah against the hockey club. We'll break the game down a bit more on the other side. More of your reaction on the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We'll dive deep into all that's happening with the Vancouver Canucks. Listen 12 to 2 p.m. on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Post Game Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to Sergachev at the point. Now to Keller, left corner. Behind the goal for Hayden. Now the near side in front. One-timer for Schmaltz. He's denied by Shelovs. And the Canucks clear the rebound out to center. This is vintage Archer Shelovs like he was in the playoffs last year. Another huge save. This one on the penalty kill.
He was really good. I'm really proud of him. You know, he's had a tough year to be at the start. That was a good start for him.
Jake DeBrusk, 21st goal of the campaign on the power play, gave the Canucks the lead, as he did last night against Vegas. But just like in Vegas, Canucks come up short. This time lose 2-1 instead of 3-1, dropping both of us back-to-back set to get back to action after the Four Nations face-off. And you are listening to the Canucks Central Post Game Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Sat and Bick here on Sportsnet 650. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And, you know, there are a lot of thoughts here about some of the roster decisions as well for the game tonight, because Carson Soucy was a healthy scratch in favor of Victor Mancini. And Sadiq says, can we talk about why Soucy got benched over Myers? And Myers picked up where he left off last night by taking a minor penalty right away to begin the game in the first period. And it wasn't a great penalty by Myers, but there we go. He found himself in the same spot. I don't know if you can blame him for the goal against either goal against, like even the five. So he was on the ice for the 2-1 goal on the power play. I don't know if I want to put it on him. Like it's him and Hronek that are out there.
No, yeah, it's just
it's hard on that one too, right? Like it's ends up being a 2-on-1.
So on that one, like it essentially becomes like a 3-on-1 up top for Joshua, right? And the puck comes up to Sergachev, and Joshua pushes out, and so when he goes wide, like it's just too easy for Sergachev to give it to Keller to rip it across through the seam where Joshua just was, all the way back across to Nick Schmaltz. Now, the shot does go through Tyler Myers, so maybe it's like, hey, you can get that block there. It's a really good play by Nick Schmaltz. You got to give that guy his credit.
Yeah, it's
but
great
it,
play
like
by
the shot definitely goes through Tyler Myers to Gunther's stick to tip it.
I guess maybe he can block that. But I don't. Like I said, in the first goal, came off a face-off, and the defensemen really weren't at fault for any of the sequences that happened on the goal, right? So I don't know if I want to blame either defensive for any of the goals, but to Sadiq's point, Myers has been a bit rough now.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of games, penalties. I mean, seven penalties by their defensemen, those two defensemen through the first these two games here. So you can't be spending that much time in the box. But I thought Soucy being benched was a show of confidence in Elias Pettersson to play the left side tonight in a back-to-back situation by the head coach because Soucy went out. But at the same time, like, I think that's quite a statement to sit Soucy in a back-to-back. And I wouldn't blame DP for anything either. I thought he played fine tonight, right? I thought Mancini was okay. I don't know if that matters.
And Soucy was kind of rough yesterday,
he
too.
He was. But it's, you know, like we thought Soucy was finding his game, and now he's being healthy scratched again. It just shows you where his position is on this blue line, right? As we were discussing before, that's why he's on the market, whether a trade happens or not now. By the deadline, we'll find out.
So I did some math here.
Okay, what do you have? What do you have for us?
Actually, I should say the programs did the math. I just inputted things.
Okay, very good.
Shout out to Microsoft Excel. Still waiting for that sponsorship. I'm here for you.
They owe you.
So the Canucks, as far as total shot attempts, are second to last in the league. Second to last in total attempts per game as well.
I don't think that's good.
No, it's not good. But again, like different ways, like different styles can win different games,
sure.
Okay? But I'm just preventing facts. As far as shots on goal, the Vancouver Canucks are second to last. As far as shots on goal per 60, the Canucks are second to last. As far as shots that get through and are like total shots and attempts and how many actually get on goal, the Canucks are sixth last.
Mm-hmm.
46.3%. Just to provide context, number one is Edmonton Oilers at 51%.
Yeah.
So there's a 5% gap of how many attempts the Oilers are getting through on goal than the Canucks.
It's significant. It's very significant.
Huge.
That really adds up. And I mean, Robin Victoria says you can go so long without Hughes. Eventually, his absence is going to catch up, no doubt. But the reason his absence is felt so much is because of all the stats you just mentioned. The Canucks are so poor.
He hasn't missed all those games, yeah.
Right, and like he's played a lot of those games. And even with Quinn, this is where they've been.
And again,
and
as
without
I
Quinn, yeah. It's almost like you have no punch. And Hedl does his best to be the one guy, but it's really, really evident right now through these two games that Quinn Hughes is absent.
And again, the stats can paint a certain picture for you. And as I was mentioning, the shots through, well, fifth highest in the league are the Chicago Blackhawks as far as getting shots through on goal. But they also don't take a lot, so you can skew the numbers that way. The worst in the league are the Carolina Hurricanes as getting shots through. But they take 16 more attempts per game than the Hurricanes. So you can offset the discrepancy of not getting through on net with the volume. And that's how they're achieving their victories.
So they're still getting more on net than the Canucks are, correct, despite having a bad percentage.
As far as what goes through on goal, yeah, they have 6.5 more attempts to get on goal more. So who cares if you are a percent or two behind Vancouver?
Yeah.
You're getting 6 more on goal. And like this is where issues crop up. And it can, you know, the theory of how they're playing might just be a bit more challenging to constantly wait for, hey, the better play. Always wait for the better play. Well, to be honest, they're not creating.
Well, again,
the better play is not finding itself for them enough times.
Well, so here's something that's happened these last two games. Some of the best chances the Canucks have had haven't even resulted in a shot attempt. Because the pass hasn't been connected, the guy missed the puck entirely, or the pass got deflected at the last minute. But they've had opportunities to do something, and they've done nothing with it. There was a couple tonight, too. There was one Hedl that he wasn't able to connect with Besser, but the one that Pettersson had to DeBrusk, it was a great play, and if had that pass gotten through, DeBrusk might have a tap-in backdoor. But the pass didn't get through. It shows you there's still a lack of quality in that final moment so often from these players.
So again, if you're going to take less shots because you want to play for bigger quality, as you mentioned, quality, well, you're second to last in the league in quality.
Yeah.
High dangers, they're second to last. That's an issue.
And I know through Clear Sights earlier this year, Woodley shared with us that they were generating some more than what public data was telling you from some east-west shots and some of the things from the slot and things that they were doing. But even that has tailed off. Now, we have to check in again to see where they're at after trades and all that. But they're just generating next to nothing. And we chart our own chances every game, Vic. You do yours, I do mine. We always kind of exchange notes and talk about things. And I don't have a running tally going. But one thing we know, every single night outside of a handful of games, they're lacking in quality chances.
Have been multiple moments this season where Sat or I have mentioned to the other one, so we're like, hey, that chance, it's like, oh, you counted that one as a high danger?
Yeah.
Because I don't have any other for the period.
Right. I'm like, did you count that? I'm not sure.
And so we have to convince the other ones, I think this is a high danger play because of this and this. And it's like, man, we're talking about four passes here and all these guys get back into coverage. That you count that as a high danger? And we trade
debate.
Punches and we throw popcorn and we're like, you fool, and we walk away from each other.
No, stick ice cream in the other person's face. You know, like that's
but,
what like, happens.
That's happened multiple times this season. Yeah. Like we're in a period, we're like, oh wow, they had no high dangers that period.
Yeah, and it's like we're trying to figure, what this was this because we'll look at natural stat trick and it'll be like one high danger, and we're like, what was a high danger?
Yeah.
I have a hard time figuring it out, and it's. And the other thing is we're even counting or not, but we're at least acknowledging the chances where a shot didn't happen, which is something that the shot.
Correct.
Even with that in mind, we don't have a lot of chances that we come up with every single night. Right. And I think that is something that's been a real issue through the entirety of the season
but
so far.
Then we go back to the conversation of like the guys that they have in the top six and, you know, the style of chances that they're trying to create. Like we're very aware of this. And we've talked about point shots and creating tips and rebounds and all these things. They are all like accessory chances, right? Like something needs to happen prior to you getting the chance you want.
Yeah.
How are you creating your own chance? Like who's creating their own shot, to use a basketball term there? Like who on this team is capable in creating their own shot?
Quinn Hughes.
And yeah.
That's it.
It should be Elias Pettersson. Yeah, it's Filip Chytil now.
But at the same time, you know, and you're kind of got mad at me almost because we were talking about this. It's like, dude, Filip Chytil's done great.
Okay, the play, I think it was the second period or third period, where Chytil, I think it was the start of the third period.
Right.
Chytil enters the zone,
yeah.
Takes a pass, like a really nice take, and has this backhand that whistles past the post. And so I was like, oh, you missed the net. It's like they have nobody creating offense right now.
But no, but you're right. I mean, he's and I've been giving him credit, but he's also missed the net a lot. Like last night, there were two big rush chances, one 2-on-1, missed the net on both. Tonight, a couple chances, missed the net on both chances. Like it's even when they do good stuff.
He was 50% tonight. Yeah. Six shot attempts, three of them got on goal. So he was one of their better guys
that's
tonight.
That's good. He was better tonight. But my point is, like, these guys missed the net a lot. Like, even when they do good things, a lot of it ends up being missing the net. How many 2-on-1s have we seen miss the net and the puck rims out and goes out the other way? Like, it just happens consistently, right? Like, it's part of the frustration with it, right? But, you know, that's where it's at. We were talking about the lack of production from a number of players, including guys like Connor Garland. But Corey from Corey in Kelowna says, they're asking way too much from guys like Connor Garland. He's a third liner. You can't expect him to perform consistently offensively. Come on, guys. I'm okay, fair. You can say all that if you want. But so Connor Garland this season is playing 19 minutes a game. And he has 9 points in his last 30, plus he's playing power play 1 minute. Okay, that's fine. You can say he's a third liner, but that means he's not a guy then. So if you want to sit here and talk about, like, is Connor Garland a top six fixture for this team, a real play driving forward? He's had moments he's done it. I think he's a solid player. I think it helps the team out. But is that how we view Connor Garland then? He's a third liner? Like, I thought this was supposed to be his ascension into being a top six player because as good as he's been, like his scoring rates aren't significantly higher than they were last year, but he's playing 4.5 more minutes. Now, this is an issue for the entire team because they're all struggling outside of Quinn, essentially, generating offense and getting points this season. But it's just whether you think he's that guy or not, he was a guy that was providing offense earlier this year and providing a real good play driving results. And that just hasn't been there. Whether you want to blame him or not, it's hurting the team because they're not getting that push. And they were getting it at one point this season. When we talk about these things, it's just about illuminating what the issues are and who's performing in what way. And yeah, maybe he's a third liner, but that just tells you now you're even another top six guy short if you thought he was going to be a solution.
And I'll go back to it. It's like even Connor Garland, again, he's a play driver, right?
Mm-hmm.
He can carry the puck. He makes good decisions. He can probably create his own shot, but then how threatening is that shot? And so that's another one of the problems. If you're going through the guys who creates their own shot, it's Chytil, it's Pettersson, it's Quinn Hughes, maybe Connor Garland, right? You're play drivers. Because the play drivers have to facilitate for everyone, but also create for themselves. Well, Connor Garland's shot, not overly threatening. Elias Pettersson, who knows what's going on. Quinn Hughes not in the lineup. We're down to Filip Chytil.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's
and like Brock Besser.
And he keeps missing the net.
Brock Besser, not a play driver. Jake DeBrusk, not a play driver. They can be finishers, but they're not someone that's like a puck in my stick. I can move players around because my speed, my size, whatever it is, and I can get to a spot to get my shot off. And that's why we keep talking. We're like, well, they're taking point shots again because they're trying to create chances for the guys who win battles. And it's difficult offense.
No, it is. It is. And like in terms of how they can be defensively and how they can play tight hockey, they can play commendable hockey and they can play competitive hockey. I don't think they play contending hockey in any way, shape, or form.
Not like this.
No, they haven't. Like, so it's again, like, I don't want to sit here and belabor the point, but if they're thinking about holding on to guys and not sell them at the deadline because of the quote-unquote playoffs, be realistic
but,
here.
But more than anything, like, the value of at least the assessment of what's needed should be very evident.
Of course. I think it is very evident.
And so I look at a player within the group here, within the system, so like a Lekkerimäki. Again, we'll see what he is at the NHL level when he gets here.
And for those, by the way, wondering why has he not been called up, he missed the game last night for Abbotsford, so his status is somewhat uncertain. We're not sure what, but he did miss the game last night.
But at least that's someone, look, if he hits his potential.
Yeah.
Right? Like, already he looks like he's got a dynamic shot. We've seen the goal against the Islanders. Yeah. Like, that's something that pops, and that's something that's going to translate to the NHL level. Is he someone that creates his own shot? Can he take a puck from a center and get his own entry and cut to the middle of the ice? If he starts doing that sort of stuff, okay, that's another guy that can create his own shot. But aside from that, like, Nils Höglander is not someone. He can create jam plays and net tries, but those are difficult to come by.
Lekkerimäki did play tonight, and he did score.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, he out yesterday, in today, and scored. But for those wondering why he wasn't called up, it's because he wasn't available last night.
But elsewhere, like, again, Arshdy Baines tonight, like, that's not someone I'm looking to create his own offense. He only played 7 minutes tonight as well. But outside of that, like, they don't really have those options. So if you're assessing who it is to go get in the free agent market, that's realistic. Like, Nick Ehlers is the only one that really stands out to me, unless you're in the Mikko Rantanen, which I'd be deeply surprised about. But, like, that to me is the primary issue. If you want to become exciting, you want to become dynamic with some speed as well. We're talking about, like, the best of the best, but you need more natural top six wingers. Brock Besser is a top six player by production, but he's not necessarily a top line player by feel and by how you attack a team.
No, I'm with you on that. Let's squeeze one phone call in here before the break. Let's go to Kevin in Port Moody. Kevin, you got a couple of minutes here. We have to hit the break, but what do you have for us here tonight?
Hey, guys, I'll keep it a little short.
Attaboy.
I know I've been running long.
Long shift yesterday, man. Yeah. Come on.
Given the producer gray hairs or whatever, but no, I just think that the Canucks got a real chance to be creative this deadline, right? Like the one of the guys said last night, like, why be a buyer if this ain't our year, right? We should move Besser, open up some cap space for our team to facilitate some cap space from third party stuff, right? Like, get an extra pick. Maybe I don't know what these deals are going to look like, but let's be proactive. Let's use some space that we got and then maybe set ourselves up a bit better for something. Mm-hmm. Because I will say the Canucks management, they seem to have done well in targeting players, going after them and bringing them in and then being worked, right? Like Hronek is obviously a success. The Pettersson from Pittsburgh, you know, he's a good player, right? He's a good player. I'm not going to get into his deficiency, ceiling, the Cervelli stuff. He's a good NHL player, right? Drew O'Connor looks like a player. So let's get creative. Let's get an extra pick. Let's bring some money in for a couple months. Let's get rid of – I like what you said. Besser, they got to know. You're either in or you're out on them. Mm-hmm. If you're in, just get it done now, right? You can't let them walk. We're not in a position – we're not a cup team where, you know, if Besser walks, we got a guy coming in, or we need to figure this out with Besser. Sign him or trade him. And I don't know. Every game I'm back and forth on where the team is and where are they going this way, that way. And it's a tough couple games coming up, and it's going to be the season.
Yeah, I hear you. Kevin, good stuff, man. Kept it tight tonight. I appreciate it, man. Good stuff. We have to hit the break here. But, if you keep it tight, you'll get back in, and we can keep things moving. Now,
hard charge to the bench there for Kevin to get to, you know, for the line change.
Now, there are a lot of criticism, and Scott from Surrey, from Wally, is taking aims at management and wondering what they can do next and what they need to be held accountable for. So we have a lot to discuss. We'll get to IMAC. We'll get to player audio, more of your reaction on the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Elias Pettersson after it on the forecheck, tied up by Ian Cole. Suter in to help out. Gets it free to the line for Tyler Myers. Down the left wing for Hugh Suter. Side of the goal. Elias Pettersson in front for DeBrusk. He scores! Jake DeBrusk at the top of the crease. Scores for the second time in as many games coming out of the Four Nations break. And the Canucks get a power play goal to take a 1-0 lead.
Excellent play by Jake DeBrusk to recognize the puck is going to the left-hand side. And he just puts his head down and attacks the blue paint. Good recognition by Elias Pettersson as he gets the puck on the right-hand side to see his teammate driving towards the net, stick on the ice, makes a connection there as DeBrusk beats Kerfoot to the middle of the ice to deposit that one past Vemelka to make it 1-0 Vancouver.
Welcome back to the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. A tough loss in Utah against the Hockey Club. What are they going to be called next year?
I hope the Hockey Club.
The Hockey Club.
Let's call them the Ice Creams, man.
The Ice Creams?
Yeah, what, apparently what they serve.
Yeah, they do. That's which right. Is like, that's
the,
right.
The misreported part of all this is like, well, they serve ice cream there? What's going on here?
Okay, and it looks
great. Pistachio and caramel mocha?
In Utah?
In Utah?
They have that type of culture?
Like, they raise the bar on everyone in the NHL
They're breaking stereotypes about Utah in a hurry, man. So we were asking, what flavor ice cream was this Canucks game? And we have a lot of reaction for that. This one says, black licorice ice cream. Seems like dark days right now, the way they're playing.
Black licorice is gnarly.
Java and Langley. Boys, this game was the biggest tiger tail ice cream flavor I have ever seen.
Strong.
That's
strong.
Pretty good.
I've loved every ice cream text we've gotten in tonight.
Are there some more that you want to get on here?
I'm pumped up to just I want to get home to just
have ice cream,
enjoy a bowl of coffee ice cream myself.
Do you have coffee ice cream at home? Do you have ice cream at home, by the way?
Like, I don't actually. I'm trying to do a health kick here.
Now, I used to always have like some ice cream.
It's important to have, yeah. But as many people have texted in, you would just wind up with like the freezer burn and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because it just stays. I end up getting like some of the bars. Like you try to get like some of the healthier ice creams, quote unquote, or whatever. But like,
is that a thing?
Well, it's just like more natural, I guess.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay,
I'm bad with dairy, so I get some that are like, you know, dairy free. But you know, it is what it is. Anyways, I still want ice cream.
Yeah. Canucks look like they've had eaten ice cream yet,
or maybe too much ice cream. Scotto in Surrey says, everyone dealing with the Pettersson signing must be fired. The GM, the guy overseeing the deal, must go. That means Rutherford, Scott from Wally, and he says, please read my text. So we got your text
on. Simon's texting in is like the EP40 situation's a black hole. It's sucking the energy out of the group. Zero confidence, let alone he seems to have zero confidence as a person, let alone a player. Mm. Man.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people are now wondering, like, what about management? Like, they're the ones making these decisions. Can they find a way out? And you know, everything they touched last year turned to gold. Hasn't quite been the same this year. It's kind of been like the reality
inverse.
It's been the reality check year almost in many ways, right?
The heat check, reality check.
It really has there been, right? It's really been a reality check season for everybody involved, really. And the question
TM, the Canucks Central podcast.
Yeah.
The heat check, reality check. There we go.
Where do they go from here? You know, like, it's this is where management's going to build their legacy is going to be determined by what they do next.
The minute they made that JT Miller trade, like, that's a career defining trade.
It is.
Because if it doesn't work, you're going to lose Elias Pettersson, you're going to lose Quinn Hughes. That is the headline of the Patrick Alvin, Jim Rutherford era. It's they had Bo Horvat, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, Thatcher Demko. And it all went downhill. We can talk about previous regimes of like, oh, Mike Keenan, like traded Trevor Linden. Every era of management has a headline.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, if this doesn't fix itself, the headline is going to be they had the Norris Trophy winning D-man. And imagine like waiting here for 50 plus years for a Norris finalist and you finally get it and 2 years later it's gone.
If you fumble Quinn Hughes,
that is the headline, man.
Like if that's what happens in the end, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I understand where the frustration comes because now you look, because even, I mean, Rutherford himself acknowledged that where they're at in 2 years will determine what Quinn Hughes wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if he doesn't want to stay here, you're into like a full-on rebuild. You don't want to go there, but like that's where you kind of find yourself. If that's where you find yourself, fans are going to look at this management team the same way they looked at the Benning era, right? Like, it's going to be like, you know, at the end, there was an incompetent 8 years for the most part. And you can say these guys are smarter than a lot better job, but if they end up with no Quinn Hughes, Miller's gone, Demko's gone, and Pettersson's a shell of himself and he's gone too, you're into that rebuild anyways. And what happened these next few years? So the stakes are incredibly high. Like, it's, you know, it's about as high as they get for an organization. It really is, right? It really is as high as they get. Like, because what they do between now, this offseason, and next year to convince Quinn Hughes to stay here long-term and be a contender is the only path forward without this being a disaster.
And
because you can say a rebuild's positive, but it's going to be it's a 10-year endeavor. Like, it's like, it's... We'll
10
talk.
Years?
Bro, if you trade Quinn Hughes, I'm sorry, Bick. Like, if they get to...
10 years!
Listen, if they trade Quinn Hughes, right? Yeah. And Pettersson's gone, and if he's not the same guy, so a year from now, you're going to start getting the high draft picks. So when are you competing by? Optimistically, 2032?
It's a lot of ice cream between now and then.
2033, right? Like, no, realistically, like, that's what it's going to look like. It's going to take that long.
I'm a bit of an optimist. So my belief is, like, proper rebuilds, if properly committed to it, can be done a lot quicker.
Again, like, who's done it quickly? Nobody's done it quickly. But, so the only ones who've done it quickly were the ones, like, lucked into it.
I think there's... Okay, so when you say 10 years, do you mean of, like...
To become a contender.
Okay.
I'm saying, like, to become a contender. Like,
so
if you want to be
the phases of getting from rebuild to contender, yeah, probably 8 to 10 years.
That's what it takes.
But as far as, like, the rebuilding phase, it should really take no more than 2 to 3.
Well, sure, rebuilding. Your team's not going to be good for at least 5 to 6 years. Sure, the rebuilding part, sure. But your team's... You're going to miss the playoffs for at least 5 or 6 years.
I just wanted to clarify, like, what you talked about for 10 years. Yeah, to get to, like... Hey, we're talking about a team that can get to the third and fourth round. Yeah, I can see 8 to 10 years.
Yeah, and I understand why there is a lot of frustration from the fans, because, like, a lot of fans are thinking about the same thing and wondering, like, what happens if Quinn goes?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a fun feeling. And the reality
check... A lot of first-round picks, though. That would boost the...
Yeah, sure. We're back to talking draft again. Hope. Selling hopium. Magic beans again. Whose beans are going to grow the tallest? Which beanstalk is actually going to be the one you climb and you get to the clouds and you find your reward? And the money you've been looking for.
And the thing is, too, like, these defining moments can also, like, big decisions, obviously, but they don't necessarily have to define the management group. Like, Brian Burke made some big trades.
No, you just win the trades. Become good. Just listen, I don't care how you do it. Find a way to keep Quinn Hughes and become a contender. Mm-hmm. And you have a year to do it. You have a year. Because you're going to, like, could you get through next year and then try to convince Quinn within the second season? You probably want to have some certainty heading into that final year with Quinn. Like, imagine the stakes of heading into the final year of his contract and you don't have him signed long term. Like, you have a year to figure it out.
Man, the stakes of that season would be adequate. Like, you thought the Horvat season was, like, high stakes? Boy, the Quinn Hughes season would be out of control with the potential chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that one's coming to a head next summer.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine going into a season, final year of Quinn Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 2 summers from now? Yeah, it'd be 2 summers from now.
Yeah.
No, wait, hang on. We're 2025. The 2026 summer. Yeah, next summer.
Next summer, because, like, you're not gonna head into that final year.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what you're gonna do.
No.
You know, like for instance, Lotso says, "What about Colorado?" And they did it pretty quickly. So Nathan MacKinnon missed the playoffs 3 out of his first 4 years. They finally became a legit contender, was it in 2020? So it took 8 years to get there? And that's, like, the good version.
Mm-hmm.
After drafting Nathan MacKinnon, it took them 8 years to become, like, a legit contender.
It's tough.
You know, it's not easy. It takes time. You know, sometimes it feels like it happened overnight, but a lot happens. Like, it's like even the Chicago Blackhawks. It's like, well, look at the Blackhawks. It's like, well, they were bad for a decade, well over a decade. And it was, like, era after era built together, and they finally became good again, right? It takes time. These things do take time. And I still want to be facing that in the next year or so.
Vegas Golden Knights made the final first year.
Yeah. All right. they did. Let's take one more phone call. Let's go to Kamloops, where we have John on the line. John, what's going on? What do you have for us here tonight?
Hi, guys. You actually talked about most of what I was going to talk about just in the last section there. I don't know what they're going to do. Like, it seems everything turns to disaster all the time. Benning, no good. get Rutherford and Alvin. Now it's start. You can kind of see it. It's starting to go sideways again. And with the coaches, the players didn't play for Green. Didn't really like Boudreaux for too long. Now it's Rick Tocchet they don't like. I don't know who they're going to bring in for a coach. Like, I don't know what they're going to do. What do you think they're going to do? Because it just seems like it might be starting to unravel again. I can just see it over the, you know, the 55 years of the Canucks. Most of it, their ice cream should be rocky roads, because it's been a pretty rocky road for the last 55 years.
Yeah, well played. Hey, John, appreciate the phone call. And I get the sentiment, and I know, like, you know, we were talking about it, mentioning how fans, you know, a lot of fans feel this way. You hear it and heard it in John, and it's like, what is going to happen next? And so what I'm expecting to see here from the team is for them to be very aggressive. Like, I think what we're going to see is an even more significant overhaul here. I don't know how much
they've been aggressive all of the time since arriving here.
And now, like, things have turned upside down, and they're into this existential moment almost, right, where they have to fight this head on, and they have to overcome. Otherwise, what we just talked about is something you're going to be facing very, very realistically, right? And somebody texted and said, you think Francesco will let them rebuild? If you're not even rebuild, it's even worse. Like, it's like, either way, like, you're talking about being in darkness for a very long time. It's not that easy. You can't just turn, you know, flip a switch and find other players. But, like, this is something that would take time. But I do expect them, Vic, to be aggressive. How much do they do by the deadline? I'm not sure. But this offseason, you know, I think there are a lot of players with term on their contracts that they would be willing to move on from. Like, even a guy like Connor Garland, he'll be in the last year of his deal. Are you committing to him, or are you looking to maybe shift that out? So I think we can see a lot. We're going to see a lot of changes with this team.
And by the way, like, that's someone that could be fishing for $40 million.
Yeah.
That's...
I'm not touching that.
But, like, yeah, and that's a big price.
So, again, you have decisions to make on a lot of players. How much of that do they accelerate to try to usher in that new era and convince Quinn that they have a team that within the next couple of years can truly contend? Because you have to put those pieces together again within the next 12 months.
And, as far as people that were texting me, like, oh, the management group's got to be fired and all that sort of stuff. Like, okay, look, we read your comments. I do think you have to afford the opportunity to let this management group's draft classes come in, right?
Well, yeah,
it's their vision. So Lekkomäki on the fringes of making it. Elias Pettersson now starting to make it. Tom Olander obviously will step in at some point. So you do have to provide that opportunity for, like, their vision of their draft picks to start flushing into the lineup.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's just the timeline, you know. And what they do next is going to define how they're viewed. And if they knock it out of the park, well, they're going to be here a very long time, and they'll be known as the organization that brought glory back to the organization, right? They'll be known as the front office that did that. So a lot at stake. Glory or...
Hangs in the balance right now, man. Is it melting away, or is it being scooped in?
Scooped out. A lot of the ice cream references, though. You see, I mean, yeah. Yeah. The Utah Coneheads, somebody texted in.
Hey, the cones? That'd be pretty good. I guess it would be pylons.
Yeah.
It wasn't that great of a one.
Yeah, a lot of Rocky Road text messages, like John also mentioned.
Certainly.
All right.
Let's get to the main event, like dessert.
Let's get to the main event. Let's get to the dessert of the evening, and it's the man we call the triple threat. You watch him on TV, read him on digital, about to hear him on radio from Utah, enjoying some beautiful soft serve ice cream. He is Ian McIntyre.
I gotta think that this was Bick's idea.
This is actually Eddie's genius. But yeah, you get ice cream truck music coming in for tonight.
happy memories of childhood. I'm sorry to say I didn't get to finish my ice cream. Although you may have noticed, I was trying.
Yeah, you were. I mean, you were locked in. I mean, you
were focused.
Like,
that was great. That
ice cream
was inspired.
So delicious that you had no care in the world and focused solely on just consuming that ice cream. It looked really good on TV, I must say.
Yeah, no, the problem was I had too many cares in the world because there was such a long lineup for the ice cream. By the time I got back to the press box, the third period was on and I needed to quickly shovel it down. But I'll say this, and I brought this on myself, and you know, I've said before on certain things, they're so bad, it's good. This is so bad, it's good. Like, what can I do? Yeah. Like, you just laugh about it.
It's so good.
But
it's fantastic.
But I've been doing this a long time. So this is a new arena. They don't have a proper press box. They didn't have a seat for me. So they said, well, can you sit where the broadcasters are? Because Sportsnet has a couple of extra seats. No problem. Love to sit near Shorty and Dave. But I'm not naive. I know the camera's on them sometimes. So I made sure there was some distance between me and Dave, thinking, well, when they do the two shot of them talking before the period starts, I'll be out of the shot. I didn't know that the camera was at an angle off in the corner.
Yeah.
So that distance that I had allowed, my safe zone was not safe, clearly. So anyways, I'm lucky it was just ice cream because I'd thought about cotton candy.
They got cotton candy there too? They were putting the rest of the NHL to shame.
Yeah, I made that up. The ice cream was really good.
Yeah, it looked really good. Pistachio? I mean, it's fancy ice cream too. It's like gelato.
Yeah, the pistachio was gelato, and the caramel mocha was ice cream, and both were delicious. I'm not sure I'd do the same combo. They didn't quite go together.
What else was on the menu?
They had other flavors?
There were lots.
Man, we got Baskin-Robbins there? What's going on here?
Dozens of places. It's interesting as well because their concessions are almost entirely, and forgive me, I don't know exactly how it is at Rogers Arena, but I know when I go down and buy the fancy prime rib sandwich, I just order at the cash register and I give them my debit card. But at this rink, everything is ordered with your phone. So there's no cashiers. You just order your phone and then you stand around while they make it. And my problem was, it's hard to gauge how long the wait is when there isn't actually a lineup to order. There's like some people standing around and they're looking at their phones, but okay, have they ordered or are they just, what are they doing? Anyways, the system worked. I had quite a choice of flavors.
So wait, this is concession ice cream, not media provided ice cream?
Oh, no. I paid for that.
Okay. All right.
That was $12 US.
So okay.
Set about $17 Canadian.
So
a dish of ice cream.
Better be good ice cream.
It was good ice cream.
Yeah, it looked really good.
I love like regional really ice cream. A marketer is going to be like tracking flavor sales in Vancouver. It's like, why is pistachio and mocha caramel selling so hot in Vancouver right now?
Yeah, I don't think that pistachio was a big seller because I was eager. I'm looking, okay, I'm pretty sure that mostly vanilla thing with the stripes of brown in it, that's the caramel mocha. So I was watching for what he was reaching for to think, well, maybe this is mine. And when he reached for the pistachio, it was like the first scoop out of the bin. So I don't think it's a big seller, but
there we go.
Old world traditionalist. I'm sure Riccio is all over pistachio gelato.
Someone's texted in,
and now suddenly I no longer have the moral high ground to make fun of Riccio for whatever reason, because everybody can make fun of me.
Yeah.
I would argue you're the victim here, Ian. You're just trying to enjoy an ice cream here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hate seeing myself on TV at any point, which was a dilemma when I was on TV, because you really need to watch so that you can see what you do well and what you need to improve on. So, but I've never liked what even home videos, anything. Like, I just don't really like seeing myself. Yeah. But as I say, that was, I did watch because it seemed to got a lot of attention. I'm glad that Sportsnet still has the impact in the market that it does. It seemed to get a lot of attention, so I couldn't help but seeing myself a little bit. And I'll just say again, it's so bad, it's good. What can you do? But
it's fantastic. Honestly, it's great content.
Yeah, I'll do anything to get back on TV.
So. Hey, listen, viral moments, that's what matters. But you know what? It's one of those things. Like, it was a great distraction for us because
it was the best part of the game. Ian.
It really was. I mean, and you were there. You got to watch it. I know the angle isn't the greatest with how that arena is not built for hockey, and they will change that for next season, hopefully. But, you know, what were your thoughts on the Canucks being very anemic offensively yet again?
Yeah. Well, my angle was pretty fabulous, I got to say.
Oh, really? Okay, good.
And it's still because we're close again, not a proper press box. So we were how would I describe it? We're right at the top of the lower bowl, but fairly close to the ice. So I had a great, I enjoyed the view almost as much as I enjoyed the ice cream. But to me, it was a far more disappointing game than the Vegas one, because the Vegas one, they figured it out in the third, right? And they knew what they had done wrong about not skating and not being direct and not attacking in the middle of the ice and I'm talking about the first two periods in Vegas, and especially the first, and taking penalties, interrupting your flow and disrupting your lines, and not allowing yourself to really get in the game. And then they figured it out in the third. So you know that they had those conversations after the game about, okay, let's start the next game like we finished the last one. Let's do all those things. And what was it, four shots, or did they add one? Was it five in the first period? But again, three penalties, all related to defensemen and their experienced defensemen too. This isn't young Elias or Vittorio. I bet he likes ice cream too. Vittorio, making mistakes. This is, you know, Marcus Pedersen and Tyler Myers. And then it was Derek Forbert with the hold in the third period that, you know, hurt their chances of tying up. But they just, you know, to have that kind of game after what they saw in Vegas, and also in Vegas, I mean, I think Utah's a sneaky, dangerous team. And I've said that all season, like they're kind of a wild card, and maybe they'll end up being literally a wild card team, but they got a lot of speed and a lot of talent. And I think they're really well coached. I think they have a good coach. And so they're dangerous, but they're not the Golden Knights. And the Golden Knights game, of course, was the first one coming out of the break. So, you know, you've assembled your team on the road. You've had this practice on a Friday in Las Vegas. You've got guys coming from all over. Some people were there early. Some guys, the head coach barely got there in time for the practice. So it wasn't ideal prep. It was very unusual, very out of the ordinary. Well, I mean, it's only a day later, but this isn't the first game back now. Like you should have been able to work out some of the bugs and learn some of the things from Saturday. And it didn't appear the way they played this game that they really took anything out of Saturday to make themselves better today. I thought today was a lot more disappointing than last night.
How do you reconcile with what Rick Tocchet says post game sometimes, where it's like, hey, he's mentioned like guys just have to make more plays or hold on the puck, and today it's changing the angles and not hitting the net, versus like the consistent reality of the team like doing the opposite so frequently, what's the next stage of what we're supposed to see of what this team is supposed to do?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's going to be up to the coaching staff. Tocchet, you probably heard him say they have 2 days now before the next game to try to figure things out. I know he's frustrated. I talked to him briefly after his main press conference about one player in particular, but I know he's frustrated, but there's also a certain reality about what this team is now, you know, in the wake of the Miller trade. Now they had a pretty good bump, you know, the week after the trade, before the schedule break. They had all that enthusiasm of those new guys coming in. They had the fresh air, like there was some clarity about what the team is and where it's going now. And there was, you know, a better defense between the arrival of the older DPD and the promotion of the younger DPD, you know, the defense was just better. Even now, missing Quinn, it's not going to be better than it would be with Quinn, but I'm saying it was a little more dependable. It was a lot more to that identity that Rick Tocchet and all other coaches talk about for their teams. You could recognize, okay, this is how they're trying to play. This is what they're going to do. And Brock Besser tonight, who's another guy struggling, they said, you know, we know that we're a team that needs to be able to win games 2-1 right now. Now, hopefully they score more than two goals sometimes. But even that week after the Miller trade in those four games when they went 3-0-1, they only scored 9 goals. But they were so good. They were so good defensively. Now they've only scored one goal in each of the two games. The momentum that they had just seems to have been stalled or stopped by that 2 weeks off. And now they're trying to get it going again. But the reality is, this isn't a high octane, high scoring team, and it's not going to be the way it's configured, and it's not going to be the way that Rick Tocchet is coaching it, where they have a focus on not giving up a lot and keeping themselves in games, and then they're waiting for their offensive players to start playing like offensive players again. I mean, DeBrusque is the only guy scoring, and it's not just Pettersson, but Pettersson is fairly shocking when you look at the 6-game sample since the night of the Miller trade. Just 2 shots on net, or sorry, 4 shots on net and just 2 assists in the 6 games. There's almost everybody else on the team who you know would rely on for some sort of offensive contribution is also struggling, but those guys are shooting the puck. I quickly looked it up for my story. So Brock has scored twice in the 6 games, Besser, but he's got 12 shots. Garland doesn't have a point, but he's got 12 shots. Hedl, who has really looked like a different player since that break. I mean, he looked like a first-line center, and now, you know, it was unreasonable to think that he could sustain that level of play, but he's just kind of gotten really quiet here, but he's still shooting the puck and he pops up in scoring chances, 19 shots since he came to the Canucks. Kiefer Sherwood, 2 assists in the 6 games, 10 shots. And Pew Suter has got 2 points and 11 shots. And I know, look, guys like Sherwood and Suter, and even to some extent, you know, Garland and Cheadle, you can't count on them to be frontline scorers. But this team stayed in this race and got to where they have so far this season because they have had contributions from the middle of the lineup and the third line and in some cases the fourth line as well. So they're not getting almost any of that right now. Obviously, they missed Quinn Hughes. We knew that they would, even though they did go 3-0-1 in those first 4 games. They need Pettersson to get going. They need Brock Besser to get going, and they need some of this scoring by committee, which they've had for most of this season, to restart.
Last one from you. It's from the inbox. This one says, the triple threat, you mean Neapolitan? So there you go.
Never liked Neapolitan. I always...
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah.
I mean, I like the strawberry, but it just, you would pick around the vanilla.
Yeah.
Because who just wants vanilla?
Well, and yeah, it just ends up, you know, you don't perfect any of it. You're just trying to, you know, satisfy 3 masters and satisfy nobody.
Yeah. Plus, it's too big of a tub, and one flavor always gets ignored.
It's always
ignored.
A vanilla.
Yeah.
It's always a vanilla.
It was always chocolate.
Well, I don't know how you guys were when you were kids, but when I was a kid, back in the olden days, and Mom brought home the big plastic tub of Neapolitan from Safeway. The chocolate and the strawberry got scooped out way more. You'd be left after a couple of weeks, you'd open the lid and there'd be this vertical wall of vanilla extending to the bottom of the tub, whereas the strawberry on one side and the chocolate on the other side was gone. But really, is there such a thing as bad ice cream?
Well, I mean, yes, but generally, no. I do agree with you. I mean, I've had a couple flavors that are not very good.
Bubble gum.
Yeah, not great.
Well, yeah, I'll go bubblegum, but I like cotton candy flavor. Yeah, I like the blue.
Yeah, that's not too bad. That's not too bad. Now I want ice cream, so we might have to hit DQ on the way home. Great stuff, Ian, as always. I know you still have some more work to do, so get at it, and we'll chat with you on Wednesday from L.A. and hopefully a better performance on the Canucks.
Yeah, I was joking about the cotton candy, but I did consider nachos. How do you think that would
Would that have been worse? Yes.
Worse in a good
way? The ice cream, because I mean, you were locked in, but you were eating the ice cream with a spoon. It was very wholesome.
It was very regal. I was just thinking, like, you didn't George Costanza it, so it was very well done.
If you're stuffing your face with nachos and you have, like, you know, salsa and guac on your face, it just would not have been a good
one. Plus, like, concession cheese.
Yeah.
It's like,
no.
Well, I would say I don't know how it looked, but I kind of do know how it looked. But I can say I was shoveling it in. My RPM... red line. I was close to the red line on how fast I could eat that ice cream. But again, only so I could serve my audience.
Very good.
Get back to work for the third period.
Very good. And you did. You served us with some great content tonight. We appreciate it, Ian. Great sport,
I'm
as
glad,
always.
I'm glad everybody could take some enjoyment.
Yes. It was great. It was great. We need all the enjoyment we can get after games like this. But great stuff, Ian, as always. I look forward to reading your latest on sportsnet.ca when it's up.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. That's Ian McIntyre. Great stuff as always. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening, participating. Always a pleasure. And we look forward to being back at it again on Wednesday for the game broadcast. But tomorrow, we're back again. Bick has a people show 3 to 4. I'm on Canuck Central 4 to 6 with Dan Riccio. And special thanks to Fast Eddie Gregory. All of you again for listening. This has been the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.